Steve Clemens is a former executive vice president of the New America Foundation. He's now a senior fellow and directs a program called the American Strategy Program, which is a big picture look at how America can and should and must relate to the world. And he is also the publisher of the popular political blog, The Washington Note. Steve Clemens.
Hey, thanks, Terrence, and I'm a great fan of yours. I catch you on Huffington Post all the time.
Great. Thank you. Let me ask you, first of all, you heard the setup. We're looking for the next 20 minutes or so, 15 to 20 minutes at the big picture. What is this American Strategy Program? And I assume that that answer will lead right into what you kind of view as the real state of America in the world right now.
Yeah, well, the American Strategy Program, which I directed a think tank in Washington, is really a composite of people who are looking at everything from, you know, nuclear issues to, you know, what we're doing in the Middle East and Asia, what's going on with the global economy. But collectively, if you were to step away from all that detail, what I did when I helped launch and create this program is it was really designed to help take back territory in Washington from the neoconservative movement. No one was really organized a few years ago to begin rebuilding the linkages, in my view, to bring back both a kind of principled American engagement in the world, engagement in American issues, international issues, engagement in international institutions, and to make the case for a strong, principled, enlightened American engagement in the world. And what was happening is that the neoconservatives, in my view, were making the case for America gambling its prestige in some very reckless crusades, and allied with people like John Bolton, who really represented a kind of pugnacious nationalism that was very close to isolationism, in my view. So what we've been trying to do is make the case that we should be engaged in the world, that the world matters, and that under this administration, America's national security portfolio is about the worst it's been in the last century. It is very, very hard to imagine someone wrecking the prestige, the ability of the United States to do many of the things it needs to do elsewhere in the world by showing its limits in Iraq. And I think that people who are watching the campaigns unfold right now, something is very important to keep in mind as people talk about the surge or talk about what they liked in the president his actions or not. I imagine there are a lot of not on this show. But even as they assess Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, the Iraq War was an enormously reckless gamble. America, as I'm sure Tom Hayden and Mark Weisbrot, who will follow me, was already skating on thin ice as a superpower. And when you show your limits as a superpower, two things happen immediately. Your allies don't count on you, and your foes move their agendas. And in my view, the equilibrium that we had in the world has really been thrown off, and we're in a very, very dangerous and unstable period. So essentially, we're trying to rethink this through and get back to sort of thinking about the combination, the balance between American interests and global stability and global welfare.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about Iraq. Bush is likely to focus on the surge and claim great success and, you know,
he is for sure. We've seen the highlights already.
And Petraeus, you know, as the golden boy and so on. What do you say is the reality?
The reality is that America has achieved nothing, none of its political objectives. Securing Anbar province or basically doing deals with local mafioso characters inside Iraq to try to generate stability was not why the United States military was deployed there, nor is it why American men and women and many, many Iraqi citizens have been killed. So what we're getting is the appearance of stability in some quarters, though I have listened to Andrew Bacevich, whose son died in Iraq recently, but a very well-known military historian in the United States, publishes in the Los Angeles Times and the Washington Post recently, basically puncturing the notion that the surge is working. But in the case of looking at false benchmarks, what happened, and I'm very critical of the Democratic Party for allowing this to happen, is President Bush successfully dragged and seduced the Democrats into a debate about tactics and not a debate about strategy. And right now, we're not having a discussion about the broader strategic goals of the United States, and achieving our goals in the area. What we've done is we've become very concerned, you know, we're very focused on whether we've got more suicide bombers or less suicide bombers. We're no longer talking about, you know, the political objectives, which is exactly what we were sending these people to do.
Right. I always, since prior to the invasion, actually, always say how much of our attention has sucked into today's question about Iraq, which always obscures any long-term questions about our role in the world.
I'll tell you, Terry, recently I was in China. This is a true story, and I was talking to a guy who is in the policy planning staff of the Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So, you know, smart guy. He's thinking, I was joking with him, and when I went in, I asked him, what are you working on? And he says, how to keep you guys focused on small Middle Eastern countries. And you know, when you think about it, you know, there is a humorous side to it, but there's also a very real side, and that is that Iraq has become such a distraction to the United States these many years, financially, militarily, that we've really dropped the ball in many other parts of the world and with many of the other issues that are major challenges. And again, I really worry about the pretensions that we have that we think that we'll just bounce back. Moises Naim, the publisher of Foreign Policy magazine, recently wrote this piece in the Washington Post, said the world wants America back. And I think the world's already gone, you know, after we elected Bush again, I think the world began moving on, and I don't think it's like a rubber band. I think many of the great stakeholders in the world today, many of whom are allies but some not, have already made different bets. So I think it's naive and actually dangerous to think that we can just bounce back into common, you know, into
right.
patterns.
What are the big issues, problems, places America ought to be putting its attention in terms of its world position?
If a different president were giving this State of the Union a year or 2 years from now, I would hope to hear that we, you know, the president would level with the American public is that we're in pretty bad shape globally, that there are some things that we can begin to do right, but there are no silver bullets to bouncing back. And part of the things that we need to begin doing, a list of them, is to begin finding the areas in which you can find common cause with other global stakeholders. One of the biggest existential challenges the world has is climate change. So playing a pivotal, constructive role on that front and discussing foreign policy and national security not in the old 1940s, 1950s, 1960s sense, but looking at these broader issues, which, you know, I call them avant-garde issues or 21st century issues, but they are national security issues. The developing, in what I call the developing nation problem, your next guest, Mark Weisbrot, thinks about this a lot, is also another big issue. Looking at, you know, poverty, looking at disease, looking at what Robert Kaplan once wrote about, you know, the problems of the world of the coming anarchy. These are issues that cut across nation states that need to be addressed. But then there's some classic problems that are nation-state problems. I think that China and China's rise, its use of resources, and what track it chooses to go are very important. It doesn't mean that there's a collision, but our absence elsewhere in the world as China finds its way into relatively easy environments to tie up resources, other states, into very beneficial situations is not good either for China nor for the rest of the world. And it's in part not their fault. It's caused by our own disengagement from these issues and distraction by Iraq. In the Middle East, I think that we need to begin looking at the region as a interconnected puzzle, that solving Israel-Palestine, for instance, is absolutely vital. But in and of itself, it's a silo that doesn't really get fixed unless you fix the Iran issue, unless you fix the Syria estrangement that we have, which I think is very fixable for that matter. It leads us into other of the big ulcers in the region in South Asia, which is Afghanistan and Pakistan, and begins to basically deal with it. I think we need to basically get in and do a regional, what my colleague Flint Leverett calls a grand bargain, with Iran, with Saudi Arabia, and with other states in the region to basically restabilize and create a new equilibrium that promotes some liberty as an issue or self-determination in these countries. But essentially, there's just no way forward unless we solve some problems like the Israel-Palestinian case. And more local to home, I know it's not on everybody's top list, but, you know, I think whether Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or President of the United States, I think they need to find something easy to show the world that we're just a very different kind of country today, and we're going to approach things differently. And I think that it's an absolute outrage that Cuba and U.S.-Cuba relations have been cocooned in a Cold War shroud, in a Cold War shell for decades in a failed strategy to try and strangle Castro. You know, this is a country no longer exporting revolution, and it's exporting doctors. And we may not like its system of government, but, you know, we've done deals with Vietnam and China, and we're now engaging North Korea. And to have this embarrassment in Cuba seems to me really nearly medieval. But I think it's something
what I'm hearing
to be
is,
used to open up to
right.
show that we're going to be in engagement.
In other words, what I'm hearing is if you had the ear of an incoming president, you'd say a big move in Cuba, which is probably 30 years overdue, sends a message to this country and to the world that things are different.
To the world, that yeah. we're ready to do business in a different way. And I think the world will breathe a sigh of relief.
And what about the Israeli-Palestine situation? Where do you see possibility?
Well, the oddest thing about it is that while the president is, of course, after the Annapolis summit, one of the really unusual things is people may not recall that in Annapolis, the year before the Philadelphia Convention, when our own constitutional convention was done, everything looked bleak. Our own delegations with Hamilton and Madison didn't look like they could get anywhere. So to some degree, you know, I hold out some hope that something could come out of the Annapolis meeting on Israel-Palestine. Bush is trying to build a legacy out of it. Most people are giving him poor marks. But the reason I have some hope is that Mahmoud Abbas in Palestine and Ehud Barak in Israel are going to be destroyed if they don't get a deal of some sort, or at least a framework and railroad track towards a deal. And you also have many Arab states, the moderate Sunni Muslim states, who have repeatedly put their neck out, so to speak, to provide a deal or the outlines of a deal to Israel to normalize relations. And every time they do that, they put themselves at odds to some degree with their own citizens and the Arab street. And so there's a lot of fragility, and the costs of losing and not succeeding in getting an Israel-Palestine deal are higher than they've ever been. So despite the naysayers, I actually think that there's a possibility of getting something there, but it has very little to do with President Bush and his team. It has a lot more to do with just the structural circumstances in the region.
And what about the fact that, I mean, this question, we say or at least the Bush administration says we're for spreading democracy, and yet if your horse in the race is the corrupt one who's out of touch with the people, as it was when Ahmadinejad faced Rafsanjani, when Hamas faced Abbas, we end up losing in a democratic vote. What's going to change that calculus?
Listen, if we're going to embrace democracy, we have to embrace it in its fullest sense. Democracy is not ballots. Democracy is not ballotocracy. It's courts. It's the ability of the small guy to sue the big guy and win. It's the rights of minorities and women and checks and balances. We've fallen into this trap of conveying to the world and believing ourselves that just choice at the ballot box is democracy. So one, that's not it. But if we are going to go down that trap and try and promulgate that notion, then we can't stack the deck. If Hamas wins, Hamas wins. We need to try and give it the best opportunity allowed the French should have allowed this in Algeria some years ago, and give Islamists a chance at the helm, see what it's like to basically deal with people's aspirations and their need for good sewage systems and power and lighting, and get in the give and take of politics.
Yeah, I remember I spoke with Reza Aslan right after Hamas won that election, and he said, now comes the test.
Right, yeah, and it was outrageous and I think really wrong not to do it. And as you may recall, Abbas was fairly sure we weren't going to allow it. I mean, he didn't want the election to proceed, and we forced them to proceed. So in my view, democracy is not necessarily saying who's in and who's out after the fact. I mean, I think that it was a real mistake to have proceeded too quickly, and we have a very faulty notion. I don't think that the word democracy works in the Middle East anymore, to tell you the truth. We've so
it's been so
it.
Yeah, it's now
I think
linked.
Self-determination
linked.
Works
right.
better,
right?
And it may and we need to have, I think, a more humble approach to what democracy is. I think that America should promote it, but I tell you, we haven't done a good job ourselves. The best way to demonstrate democracy for the rest of the world is to show that as a society, you never know the norms of a society unless you watch it under shock and under stress. And our society did not do well. So we've lost a lot of moral credibility and the ability to talk about democracy to other states.
Absolutely. One last question, and then I'm going to let you go. on Iran, because we can assume that Bush is going to talk about Iran, and he's going to call for them to suspend uranium enrichment in spite of the NIE report that, you know, they're no longer pursuing a program and so on. How should we be relating to Iran?
I think we're going to be nickel and diming our way in, just incrementally moving forward and back for quite a while. I mean, Nicholas Burns is going to be leaving the State Department here shortly, and I think the reason Nick is leaving, this is Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs and one of the people responsible for helping to get us off of this bomb Iran track that we've been on. I think that Burns is leaving because he has no fear that Vice President Cheney's team will succeed in getting us back into a strike Iran position. But I think he also sees no breakthroughs coming in the next year, and that we've got a situation that's just going to wait till the next president comes in. So tonight, the president is going to basically soften his rhetoric on Iran. He's going to basically say, if you'll just stop proliferation, we can get these negotiations ahead. And he's going to say that he values the Iranian people and respects their legacy and history and their goals. So you're going to see a much softer line on Iran tonight. And that's in part because they're not, you know, with this economy, with what's going on in the markets and oil, we're not going to launch another war, not of this kind. But I'll tell you one thing that your show and you should look at sometime is the big fear I do have is while I have none, I think that the chance of bombing Iran is zero now. I think the chance of some sort of covert American special forces operation into the tribal regions of Pakistan is about 50-50 right now, and that's rather high. So that may be something that while all of this other is going on, we're basically training special forces right now to begin looking at an injection into Pakistan, which could be very, very destabilizing.
Okay, a place for us to put our eyes in the near future. Thank you, Steve Clemens. And
great to be with you.
We'll chat again in the future. Thanks a lot. That was Steve Clemens. He's head of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and publisher of the Washington Note.